There's a verse in the Bible in Ephesians 5:33 that says this: "So I say again, each man must love his wife as he loves himself, and the wife must respect her husband." Two very distinct kinds of love. One, a love for the wife. The other love is the wife respecting the husband. We are just different. We need to admit it and deal with it.
You're listening to Parenting on Purpose with Dr. Bob and Rosemary Barnes. I'm your host, Ruthie J, and this week we have both of you sharing the differences in marriage. Mm-hmm. And of course, we see it right there in the Bible. Mm. Hundreds, thousands of years we've known this, but every generation has to learn it for themselves.
Yeah, I think every couple has to learn it for themselves, because I think when we date, we don't really reveal all our differences. We work hard to make this thing happen. And I think it's our father who is being so fatherly here saying, let me tell you, it's going to take work. It's worthy work. It's going to be great. I really believe he didn't have to give us the sexual component. It's very complicated, but it's also very rewarding as we work through it. But I think we need to know we are the role models for our children. You know, in life, people have role models in sports and role models in other things, and you watch them and you copy them. And I had a role model in speaking, learning how to speak in my pastor, Bill Billingsley, and Chuck Swindoll at a distance, just listening to him. But our children, we are the role model for marriage. So how are we doing? And not just for the marriage as an institution, but the marriage relationship and the romance component and the self-esteem of a relationship. And I do believe each spouse has a dramatic impact on the other spouse's self-esteem. And I think the marriage as a whole has a self-esteem that it kind of brings a fragrance to the home.
Well, I think you mentioned, we talked about it a little bit yesterday, and you just mentioned it at the beginning. I think the whole crux of this whole self-esteem issue as a couple and as a home and all that, and understanding each other and romance and everything, I think there is no verse that illustrates it more than this verse in Ephesians, where it talks about a man must love his wife and she must respect her husband. That is so illustrative of the fact that God has wired us so differently. Mm. A woman is wired for relationships. She is wired for nurture. She's, my personal opinion, I think, wired for nurture because she is the main one to be the family
nurturer.
And she's the one that is the most involved in the children, really, basically. Although, of course, father is supposed to be as well. But bottom line, she is the relationship hub. That's what I was really looking for. The hub of the family, relationship-wise. And so it's just very interesting that God is basically saying here, I've wired her for love. She needs love because of the way I made her. And he needs love too, though. He does. And he needs relationship as well. Otherwise, wouldn't have Genesis 2, where a man should not be left alone, however that goes. I didn't say that correctly.
It's not good for man to be alone.
Thank you.
Right. He needs someone to get him coffee. It's somewhere in there in the modern translation.
But this respect her husband, I think, is, again, a God wiring of a particular bent for the male gender. Because I think he is basically, and of course, you know, there's so many different ramifications of that, but basically he is the one, the provision person, the provider for the family. He's the one that was, you know, in the day in the garden, he was the farmer. He was the builder of the family.
And the representative. If there was anyone that's going to be the covering of the house.
Right, the leader. Exactly. And so by nature, I believe that God has wired us very differently. And so therefore, our needs are going to be very different.
So you launch him into this culture. You launch both of them into this culture. You look at her, and she's in a culture that's very physical and cosmetic. She's pouring and pouring and pouring and pouring and nurturing the children, and nothing's pouring into her because our husband doesn't know that he's supposed to pour into her. So she's emptying out and emptying out and emptying out, and really becomes very vulnerable for all kinds of things, because I'm pouring out to the children or pouring out to people because I am innately a nurturer. And if he doesn't understand the need to pour into her in a way that she receives it, she's in trouble. And then you take him, and he is in a culture where the culture, and we shouldn't conform to the pattern of this culture, Romans says, but he's in a culture where his self-esteem, and self-esteem is a very interesting word. Self-esteem is, first of all, my self-esteem should come from Christ, but the people that are intimately around me also can play and should play a part in that. I should get my self-esteem from Christ. You know, Paul's self-esteem was taken out completely. He was a major player in the beginning of the Christian faith, and a teacher and starting churches, and then all of a sudden he's in a little little cell by himself with a Praetorian guard on shifts regularly, and he has no audience anymore. And yet he said, I've learned to be content, and I've learned to count it all joy. He got it in his letter to the church at Philippi. I've got it. But still, we play a part. I can damage my wife's self-esteem. She can damage his self-esteem. Today's man. Most of my friends have gone through an era in the past 5 years of no paycheck. It's very damaging with no paycheck and just feeling unrespectable by what I can't do for you and what I can't harvest a crop anymore. There's nothing. And so we're very vulnerable, and we can play a monster part in that where I'm deriving my self-esteem. And I be honest with you, I think it's harder on a female than it is on a male. You take, for instance, a recent Super Bowl where the Super Bowl halftime displayed from that halftime, and I get the fact that the whole Super Bowl is men. But then you have a woman act during the halftime, which was cool, could have been cool, except she was half naked the whole time, and women are watching this half naked. And a woman has to think, I don't look like that, or I'll never look like that. And is that what it takes to be on a platform?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. My husband's watching.
Yes. Yeah. And you're wishing you could put your hands over his eyes, yeah. But this is the Super Bowl.
Well, how can she compete with that? Yeah. And so as a man, I need to know, wow, I am playing a huge part in your worth here. Part of me can say, well, it's your own fault. You should derive your worth from Christ. No, the reality is I'm playing, and God mandates me to play a part in your self-esteem and a part in your worth by not focusing on that, by lifting you up and affirming you. And so we really hold a lot in our hands here in this thing called self-esteem, and it impacts the children. Mm-hmm. If we are becoming one flesh, and that becoming one flesh in Genesis 2 is an ongoing process of our whole marriage. Mm-hmm. If we're becoming one flesh, then part of that becoming one flesh is making you feel safe to, I don't even want to be glued to you right now the way you stared at that woman during the halftime show. Mm-hmm. I'm repulsed by you staring at her like that. In fact, you're staring at her like that more than you're staring at the plays and during the football game. Come on. Mm-hmm. And it was set up like that. The whole key here is we hold so much of our spouse's confidence and trust and worth and self-esteem by how we nurture or don't nurture each other, understanding the differences.
Well, as you're talking about that, it calls to mind a word that became so important to us. And as we processed, actually, when we were writing the book, Great Sex Expectations, we talked about this word a lot. It's kind of an old-fashioned word, but I love it because it's so descriptive. The word cherished.
Oh.
And that word is so illustrates what you're talking about because it literally means to be loved apart from performance, apart from that I feel loved apart from what I do or what I provide or how I look
or how I perform,
that I feel like his special somebody. And so that is so critical in this whole idea of love your wife from Ephesians, mm-hmm. that she feels that she's secure in his love, not based on how I look, what I do, if I cook good dinner, or if I can get an outfit like that, like Beyonce had on that night, that sort of thing. I need to feel loved and cherished away from that, apart from that, in spite of that, of what I do in my life.
And that's unconditional love.
Unconditional love, right.
And it's not a settling love. It's a mindset on his part. The scene was great. We used to write on Wednesdays. We would drive the children up to school where they went to school, and it was about a 40-minute drive. And then we would go through Dunkin' Donuts and each get two large coffees and continue driving.
That's how I was able to think at that hour of the morning.
Yes. Rosemary would have a legal pad, and we would talk about the next chapter. When we did that with Great Expectations, and she said, I want to do a chapter on Cherished. And I said, really? I said, I have no clue what that means. And I wrote down, I'll never forget, you said it means precious without performance. She said, you know how precious our babies were. Mm-hmm. They never performed. Mm-hmm. They never did anything to have to become precious to us. And you said, a woman wants to feel precious without performance. And it was an amazing 2 hours of driving, just processing that, because our culture grades performance, applauds performance, wants to be the next American Idol or whatever, rather than you're precious without performance. And every marriage works towards that, where he is precious or she is precious without performance, just because they are. just because they are. Then it's an amazing scene, and it's an amazing freedom to become and to give myself up to it. In the movie Notebook, it's a chick flick. I can't even believe I'm admitting on air I watched this chick
flick. Have you seen it?
You were referring to a chick flick.
Yes. You know what? I really never saw this movie, but Rosemary told me about it.
You've done well.
Thank you.
James Garner is can I just give this illustration about you two laughing at me publicly right here? It's very sad. I don't want to do this anymore. Let's switch over to Discipline in the Home.
No, we want to hear what you have to say about Notebook.
No, in this movie, his wife has Alzheimer's, and she's in a home, in an institution, basically. And he checks himself into the institution to live there. And he goes down the hall every single day and reads to her the notebook of the notes she took because she wanted to remember their marriage because she saw the onset of Alzheimer's coming. He reads her the story every day, and every day she says, that's a nice story. He reads it to her the next day because she's already forgotten it. And his kids come and say, Dad, why are you in here? You don't have to be in here. Mom's in here. You don't have to be. And he said, but my sweetheart's in here.
Mm.
Now, she does.
And Rosemary,
yes, it was a great scene. I threw up at that particular scene, but it was a great scene. It was awesome. Man. No, he nailed it. He nailed it. Precious without performance. And understanding this, and my children are watching this. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, our children see us ridicule each other and make statements. And are you ever going to get this done or whatever it is? And they pick it up. Wow, is marriage even safe? Is to give myself completely to another person? Is it trustworthy? Can I give my... Can we become one flesh, or should we remain two people separately in a contractual relationship called marriage where we don't study, analyze, and see this is the great responsibility God's given me is first learning how to have a relationship with him, and then secondly, pursuing how to have a relationship with this person where no performance is necessary. Mm-hmm. It's a task.
And you said it earlier also how you kind of hold your spouse's self-esteem in your hands.
Yes.
You know the buttons to push, you know the topics to bring up that could totally tear down, and you have to be careful, especially when you do get in arguments and you're heated up. Those cards are easy to pull out,
exactly.
And you have to remember then, you know, you still love and respect even when you're angry, and you have the power to rip them apart, but you choose
you
not
to. You do have
to.
An amazing power.
Yeah, but you choose not to because of love.
Well, here's the question. We're going to put Bob on the spot here as a man.
No more chick flick questions, please.
You mentioned earlier in the week about how I never gave up. But what I want to say to you is that you were very unusual, I think, for a man, from what I understand.
Yes, I am special.
You're special, special person. That you were teachable. And what I want to ask is, how can we as wives help our husbands understand, for example, we've been talking about this word cherish. How do I get that across without undermining the respect and, you know, saying, well, if you ever would learn to love me without performance or whatever, how can we do that? How can we help our husbands become teachable?
I think she has to make him an assignment, and she has to understand, I will never be the greatest this in the world. I'll never be the greatest that in the world. And I think, and we'll talk about this more tomorrow, but I think she has to choose to make him a long-term project. What is the best way to approach him? Mm-hmm. You would set me up well. You would say, Thursday night, can we just sit and talk? And I would say, what do you want to talk about? And you say, well, there's a couple of things I want to talk about. I just want to sit and talk. And it became safe for me. And here it is as a man. It became safe for me not to know how to do something and say, I don't know how to do this. Mm-hmm. That doesn't come out of my maleness mouth very easily. Mm-hmm. I don't know how. And so it was safe for me to admit that and begin learning something from scratch. We have been given our spouses by God. You may not think that, but God says, and we know that God causes all things to work together for good, and marriage is very precious to God. We've got to decide we're in this and never settle with the thought, this is just the way it's always going to be. Never quit, but understand the best way to approach him.
You've been listening to Parenting on Purpose with Dr. Bob and Rosemary Barnes. I'm your host, Ruthie J, and if you want to find out more about the resources that Dr. Bob and Rosemary Barnes have put together, books and seminars to help you in your marriage and your parenting journeys, the proceeds go to help the children's homes at Sheridan House Family Ministries. So it's a benefit on both sides, and you can find that online at shfm.org. You can also give to the ministry online there, or give a one-time $10 donation And those funds go straight to the children's homes. Just text two letters, send the letters SH and send it to 41518. That amount will add to your cell phone bill and that'll go straight to the children's homes. And to hear this program again, maybe with your spouse or share it with a friend or sign up to get it automatically, that's online at parentingonpurpose.org. We hope you join us tomorrow as we continue this topic of the reason for romance in your marriage on Parenting on Purpose.